Support for Valley Roundup on Aspen Public Radio comes from Roaring Fork Conservancy, the watershed action and education organization in the Roaring Fork Valley, from Aspen to Glenwood and Meredith to Marble, bringing people together to protect our rivers. More at roaringfork.org or 927-1290.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. A Snowmass town councilman is facing a felony charge for tearing apart the Picken County Jail after he was arrested for driving drunk.
If you as a journalist came across that in your court check, even if it was Joe Smo from Denver who doesn't even live here, you would write that story.
It appears that the citizens of Aspen have had enough development, or at least the kind that asks for special exceptions. The fate of the approved Base 2 Lodge could end up in the hands of voters.
I'm just kind of sick of debating this. I would like to see it just go to a vote so we can get an answer once and for all and just kind of stop going around on these same points over and over again.
A proposed Four Seasons Hotel in Aspen's West End neighborhood is another sign of change. We'll see how it's received by elected officials and the community. And maybe all this development and tourism success are reasons why the city of Aspen is losing ground on reducing greenhouse gases. Too many people and too much trash left by floaters in the Roaring Fork River inside the North Star Nature Preserve is causing angst among open space officials.
Can't there be an open container and a no smoking clause for a nature preserve? I mean, is that too much to ask?
Joining me this week are Lorenzo Semple, a columnist for the Aspen Daily News, Jill Beathard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Well, welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome.
Good to be here.
The latest headline in the saga of a Snowmass town councilman, Chris Jacobson, who, I guess I'll recap real quick, was arrested for drunk driving on June 26th, and he apparently did some damage at the jail. That's according to the sheriff, and he was charged with a felony. The warrant was issued on Wednesday. He was supposedly going to turn himself in on Thursday at whenever he decided. The sheriff is a little upset about this because typically when you say turn yourself in, it's kind of a courtesy, like heads up, this is happening, get your affairs in order, get the money for the bond, and that usually happens within a couple hours.
I would be very upset if a Snowmass town councilman did damage to my house, and I think generally the community is pretty alarmed by this, and I personally would be shocked if he didn't lose his job over this. There is a fine line between, you know, the fact when someone has a serious problem and making fun of that, which there's been both sides of. Allow me to cross that line and suggest that his image should end up on the mugshot issue. That's a picture on your on a coffee cup.
Well, it's a felony criminal mischief charge. Who knows how this case, the ultimate disposition, if it remains a felony or if it's a deferred sentence. I mean, I don't know how to what extent that affects things. It sounds like there is a provision in the Snowmass charter that if you are a elected official and you are convicted of a felony, that you don't have a choice. So that seems to be weighing pretty heavily. I'm sure he's thinking a lot about that and what his options are.
Even if he does, you know, plea down, right, mm-hmm. and maybe it doesn't become a felony, mm-hmm. it's still the spirit of what the charter says. Mm-hmm. And there is video of him doing this damage, so mm-hmm. it's pretty indisputable. Have you seen the video?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
What do you see? I have not seen it.
You see someone who is going a little nuts. I mean, basically what happened was he's in the padded room at the jail, and he goes off, and there's like a separate side room where there is a toilet, and he's standing on top of the toilet, and he's like ripping stuff down off the ceiling, which that's some pretty expensive padding. The sheriff mentioned that in our story. He said people are going to be shocked that this is what this kind of stuff costs, but it's an institutional kind of thing. It's a padded room. Like, you take out part of it and just kind of damaged the whole thing.
Yeah, he said that an outside firm from Denver has to come in that specializes in jails. And that padded room is going to be out of commission for 3 weeks while they do the repairs. When I was talking to his attorney yesterday, we were on the record, and I did not go off the record. I gave him the option to go off the record, but he didn't. He said that he was taking issue with the fact that just because he's an elected official, that's why the press is all over this. I said, well, I think...
It's like, what planet are you living on, man?
You know,
Yeah, I think anybody, we would all agree that's not right.
Right. If anybody did damage to a public facility, it would be news. And even more so when it's an elected official. Don't you think?
I think so, too. I think that behavior of standing on a toilet, destroying a ceiling and a wall is possibly indicative of more than just alcohol abuse. I don't know. That's just my personal thought. I mean, last time I was standing on a toilet, there was more than alcohol involved. I'll just put it that way.
I would probably have to say the same.
Agreed.
If you as a journalist came across that in your courts check, even if it was Joe Smo from Denver, who doesn't even live here, you would write that story of someone doing that much damage to public property.
And I think that his attorney's also disputing the amount of the damage.
As you would.
Well, of course, because he wants to get it down to a misdemeanor.
Right. Well, $1,000 is the cutoff for a felony. So
even got a long way to go.
If it was $1,001, it would still be a felony.
It's like a prize fighter trying to desperately lose weight before a fight.
You know, he did come to the town council meeting this past Monday, and he was a little late. I thought he wasn't going to show up, and then when they did the roll call, he came in about 10 seconds after that. He made a couple comments.
Special events processes. They were talking about a committee for reviewing Krabunik's best practices.
Right. So it was like nothing had happened. And then I was waiting for, they do town council comments at the end of the meeting. I thought for sure he might say something. He had nothing to say.
But maybe his lawyer is advising him not to do that.
Right.
Silence brought to you by lawyers.
Let's talk about development. There's two hotels that I want to touch on. We've talked about them, you know, at length before, but they're not going away. The first one is the Base 2 Lodge at the corner of Monarch and Main, where the Conoco is. That was approved by council. Two citizens who didn't appreciate the variances that were given on that lodge went and petitioned. Over 1,000 people signed this petition to bring it to a public vote. Sounds like that they've reached the number that they need to.
Well, we don't know that for sure. They collected 1,312 signatures. They need 617 of those to be valid. Seems like that should be pretty easily done, considering they have more than double. But you never know. You know, I thought Sue Lum's column was pretty interesting this week. She's a columnist for the Aspen Times, and she's helping out on this petition drive. She doesn't like the hotel, and her job is to like verify the signatures, to go down this list and compare it to the voter rolls and make sure they're legit. And her column was pretty funny, basically saying like, "Hey, dummy, if you don't live in Aspen or you're not a registered voter in Aspen, don't sign the petition. You're not helping." So. You know, I talked to Ward Howenstein on Wednesday. He's one of the initiators of the petition, and he said he wouldn't be surprised if 30% to 40% of the signatures wound up getting tossed for one reason or another. But that still leaves them with almost 800. So.
And they need what?
617 is the magic number.
When would this vote happen?
Well, there's no guarantee there'll be a vote, even if they do get the 617, because council could rescind its approval.
If they don't, is it a special election or is it a fall election?
I think they have the option of going either way, because by the time, let's say this takes kind of 30 days to get to the council, and then we're in the middle of August, so they could set a special election for the fall, or they could just wait until November. It would be at their discretion.
Mark Hunt is the developer on this. He's the property owner. He has said to me that he is not interested in going for a campaign and going for a vote, so he would probably just pull the whole thing. And go back to his original plan, which is a mixed-use building with some commercial on the ground floor. The last public vote for a hotel was the Ritz-Carlton, if you remember, Lo.
Oh, gosh, that was a long time ago. There was a developer named Hadid, and that was, I remember when I was a kid, hearing that name being thrown about in various either hushed or angry tones. And it seems like Mark Hunt has replaced that dialogue with his name. I have had lengthy conversations on the street with both Bert Mirren and Ward Howenstein about the lodge. My thought is the town has collectively been decrying the fact that we're losing lodge rooms over the past 15 years. Now, when a developer comes forward because he is effectively asked by the mayor and city council to bring lodge rooms to the community, this is what happens. So there is a sense of brutal irony here that has reached a kind of a comical level on one front. I'm in the tourism business. We all are. So I'm for more lodge rooms. I think we need another high-end retail store with penthouses on the roof. Like, I need a hole in my head right now. And so I'm upset at the people who came forth with the petition. I'm also upset at the developer. When you're going to come forward with a project, you know, do it within the rules. Is that too much to ask?
Well, what he's saying is that I can't make it affordable and, you know, $100 a room if I have to deal with parking underground and et cetera, et cetera.
Is there not an opportunity to build parking under this and charge for it and make a considerable amount of money over the long term? I mean, let's face it, both of these corners are nightmare corners in town. The Carl's parking lot corner, that's one of the avoid-it-like-the-plague.
There's more cars going through there now than there would be for the hotel, though.
The four-way stop at City Market, that's also has to be literally one of the worst, most unpleasant corners in town.
That's where his other lodge is going, base one.
Yeah, so you put a lodge there with a paid parking underneath, and I think that makes money for you. I don't know, that's just me.
I'm just kind of sick of debating this. I would like to see it just go to a vote so we can get an answer once and for all and just kind of stop going around on these same points over and over again.
And Mark Hunt has said, well, with referendum one, which is now in the city, changes the city charter to say that if there's any variance given to any property in the city of Aspen, it has to go to a public vote. What he's saying is that the people who pass that's not representative of the entire town. It's not 5,000 people.
I actually don't appreciate that argument. When there's an election, regardless of what you think of the turnout, it's a representative sample of this community. So don't give me this, only 1,800 people voted. That just sounds like you're whining. You know, it's an election. Deal with it.
Right. And that's what will happen here. I mean, look at over 1,000 people have signed this petition, so there's at least that many people, whether they're in the city of Aspen voters or not, that's the sentiment, that they don't want this. They don't want the variances attached to this property.
And my theory is this whole dialogue that we're having, which I agree with Curtis, this is tiresome. It's energy sucking. It sucks the joy marrow from my bones. And I think that I really wish that this would... I think this is to blame from the art museum. I really think that all of this dialogue that we're having within the past year can go back to a laser-focused hatred of the art museum.
I mean, we could all be sitting at the Wiener Stube eating pancakes right now.
Yeah, pancake sandwich.
And life would be just glorious.
Right.
What happened? Where did we go wrong?
Curtis, you and I were both sitting in that room when the council was debating whether or not they should approve a mixed-use building at that corner. Now, when you look at it, man, that was a great alternative. It was set back.
I don't know. Not really. It was a big, gross thing. Looks like it should be in Chicago or Denver.
Are you talking about the art museum? Or are you talking about the first proposal?
The first proposal. It's more penthouses on stilts.
Which goes back to, do we need penthouses on stilts or lodging rooms? I mean, this is the choice.
Well, that ship has sailed. I mean, there's enough penthouses now on top of commercial buildings. They've outlawed penthouses. There's no more, but you know, there's at least a handful of buildings that have the right to build a penthouse before the 28-foot height limit went into effect. And there's already another 10, you know, that sold for over $10 million. So they're already there. Do we need affordable rooms? Yes. Do we need to just take the ones that we have and remodel them and get them up to date, and then somehow, I mean, I don't know how you get a small lodge owner to make money anymore. They're saying they can't do it. I don't know what the economics
are. It's not so much that they can't make money, it's that they can make a whole lot more money selling their property to someone who's going to develop it into condos. That's the problem.
Which brings me to the next hotel proposal. I was just riding my bike this morning down Hopkins, and I looked at the property where they are proposing a very large Four Seasons Hotel at the corner of 7th and Hopkins. It is a very quiet corridor that is just really nice, quiet neighborhood. This property owner wants to develop it into a commercial venture.
Well, didn't we talk about this last week, that this area is already very connected to the community by way of the fact that it is a pedestrian and bicycle-only street, which is awesome. We should have more of those. And so putting up a luxury lodge, I mean, the construction would be such a nightmare on that corridor, where you're not even allowed to drive your car for more than a block.
Do we have to just develop every single last piece of land in this community?
That seems to be the moral of the story. It really does. Everywhere you look.
That's exhausting.
It is exhausting. That's probably the fatigue. That's why so many people latched onto Referendum 1, because it's exhausting. It's tiresome. And they're tired of being told they have to do something and they have to accept these trade-offs.
Lo, you grew up here. What's your take on it?
Well, I think that the Shadow Mountain is a really interesting part of town. It's this really rugged kind of refuge almost of or mining. There's mine tailings there. There's when I was a kid, there used to be a lot of kind of hippies camping out up there in little shelters. I used to hike up there a lot on the, there's a whole maze of trails up there. It's very steep and it's a really dangerous place to hike around. That's what makes it so fun. Well, Four Seasons, as much as I like that hotel chain, it is a chain hotel, and I think it would be better off at the base of 1A. I mean, if Four Seasons came in and said, hey, we want to build a hotel at the base of 1A, I would be, I don't know. I think that would be a better place.
And
personally,
like, what an interesting comment, because we're not totally anti the Four Seasons. It just needs to be in a place where it makes sense with the character of the surrounding neighborhood. And right at the base of the mountain, I mean, that would be really cool.
There is opportunity, Jill, for that. I mean, there's approval for a lodge to be there.
I can't imagine in their right minds that the owners of that property with the Four Seasons would want to go ahead with a battle and a huge downsizing, and then the whole dialogue about we can't make money, et cetera, to get a Four Seasons at the base of Shadow Mountain.
Well, the owners of that property are the ones that want to develop it into a Four Seasons, right? Isn't that correct?
That's correct. The owner is the developer.
So they do other luxury hotels, I think, like in the Dominican Republic and Florida.
Yeah, and they're tied to like a Latin American media empire as well.
And Jill brought up a good point about the Four Seasons, how I was saying, yeah, it's cool. It's a chain hotel. Let's build one. I mean, if you look at the base areas now, we have an influx of chain hotels. We have the St. Regis. There's the Ritz-Carlton. You know, the Four Seasons, in a way,
Snowmass, Westin.
Westin is an actual fit.
Holiday Inn.
Yeah, in the new kind of lodging paradigm.
This is Valley Roundup, a look at the week's news with writers and editors in the Valley. Joining me this week are Lorenzo Semple, a columnist for the Aspen Daily News, Jill Beathard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Well, with all this development comes pollution and greenhouse gases, and the city's not doing so well on its goal to reduce that. And Curtis, you've reported on this couple times this week. Can you kind of give us a refresher course on what the issue is?
Yeah, you know, the city put out some numbers, and whenever the city puts out some numbers, that's always interesting. But the moral of the story I got out of it was that, you know, every 3 or 4 years, they do a check-in, and they see how much greenhouse gas emissions, pollution, you can attribute to everything that's going on in Aspen, from, heating our buildings, driving our cars around, planes coming and going from the airport, keeping the lights on, et cetera. And we had a pretty significant drop when we started measuring this stuff. In 2004, 2007, 2011, we wound up being down like 7% over that time period. In the 3 years since 2011 to 2014, it basically leveled off. You know, it dropped like 0.4%. My suspicion here is that the big decrease we had you know, 5-6 years ago, that was when the city switched all of its power or more of its power to renewable energy. So it's not like we were actually conserving anything. We were just buying wind power instead of coal power.
Right, from Nebraska.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's not like we've really done a whole lot to, you know, made a lot of sacrifices to shrink our carbon footprint. I mean, they have moved the needle, it sounds like, with transportation a little bit, you know, getting some cars off the road and putting more people on buses. But it's not like, you know, people are putting on their sweaters in their monster home and turning down the heat a little bit. I don't think that's happening.
No.
Nor is it ever going to.
I mean, look around. There's development everywhere. There's huge houses. There's construction happening.
I mean, our population is growing. Our sales tax receipts are growing. All these things. That is one successful point where they're like, okay, well, yeah, you know, flat doesn't sound great. But when you look at that in the context of we're growing, we're, you know, we must be doing something right. You know, really the best thing they could do to actually fix this. So Holy Cross Energy supplies power to all the big monster homes, kind of outlying the main city of Aspen. And that's something like, you know, 12 or 15% renewable energy. So if you could get Holy Cross on board to have a higher proportion of renewable energy, that would really put a dent in our carbon emissions. So if I was the city, that's what I would be focusing on.
How likely is that?
I don't know. I mean, it's a much bigger organization, and it serves kind of a 3-county area. And they may not have the same sort of, you know, let's be green sensibilities that Aspen does.
What I see happening over, you know, the past, as far as I can remember back, is this huge swaths of development happening in the county. Mm-hmm. And that's really, for some reason, I'm not sure why that's going unnoticed, but a lot of these buildings that are going up around in the county that are, you know, trophy ranches, private houses, are gargantuan, and they're really flying underneath the radar. I'm not sure how that's happening.
Didn't I read a headline about Aspen Homes being the largest emitter of greenhouse
the way they classify gases? That is what contributes the most out of all. So there's homes, commercial businesses, ground transportation, and the airport are sort of the four main pieces of the pie. And of those four, homes, residential homes, are the biggest consumer of fuel that creates carbon emissions, followed pretty closely by commercial buildings, and then transportation is next, followed by the airport. I always thought the airport would be more. The way they calculate this stuff is super fishy too. If you really look at the fine print, it's like the greenhouse gas emissions for planes. It's like the fuel burned on takeoff and on landing. And while, you know, it's like if you're flying your private jet here from Atlanta, it's not like they're counting that whole trip, which is ridiculous. Like they should totally count that whole trip because those are carbon emissions that are directly related to Aspen. If Aspen wasn't here, that trip would not happen.
Where are these meters that they take the readings, or how do they take the readings?
I think they get data from power companies and from the airport about how much fuel they dispense, and you know, there's traffic counts and things like that. I mean, but it is definitely a lot of estimation and a lot of assumptions go into these numbers.
I know in Snowmass they've adopted some green building code regulations. Has the city of Aspen done anything like that?
I think our codes are known for being fairly green.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we have the international building
code. But they
code.
Keep tweaking right, them and they right. keep changing them. I think that's part of the effort going forward is there's going to be another rewrite to building codes going forward to require you to build the most energy efficient building possible.
But it's still building. It's still, this is all a direct result of, again, just big money coming in here.
But big money can also afford to put solar panels on the top of their house.
That's true.
It's really not the money as much as it is forcing people to practice what they preach and, you know, preserve the environment that they love so much that they visit here.
You know, I'm considering living in a teepee, but even then, I mean, if you ever notice when you're going around to build a campfire, what are you doing? You're taking wood, you're burning it, and it's polluting stuff. So
what do you think you do with your newspaper? You're cutting down trees. At least the radio doesn't have that footprint.
I'm sure we could find something you guys have.
I mean, is there anything that positive that comes out of this besides the fact that business thrives? The fact that developers want to develop every piece of land there is. And I mean, look at Smuggler Mine is up for sale, and that's something that is a really cool thing that's going to go away. I feel town has completely changed. I'm not complaining about it, and I'm not going to move. But you, don't you feel that way?
The town has definitely changed. It's really hard to put a finger on what, I mean, obviously there's more people here. The big difference is there's more people. The pace is a lot faster. To me as a parent, it doesn't feel as safe as it used to. It feels like everyone is in a hurry and there's a lot more traffic and we're under constant construction. To me, that just makes the outerlying areas of town and the wilderness that much more valuable. That's what all the building and construction does for me personally. It makes the mountains more valuable.
Okay, so there's a lot more people in the mountains too. So if I want to go do the Hunter Creek Loop and get some solitude, I'm doing it at 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30, basically, if I don't want to see anybody. Which brings me to the next point. Last thing we'll talk about, North Star Preserve. Again, here's a place I used to go to, kayak down the lazy river, and now it's just a big party. Everybody's throwing beer cans, there's deflated pool toys that are floating along into the North Star Preserve, and now that's another place I can't go anymore.
Joe, what are your thoughts on North Star?
Those are your friends.
I've definitely floated North Star and done exactly that. I've always cleaned up after myself. I don't really understand why it's so difficult for people to take their stuff out, throw away their beer cans. I've never understood that, though. So
I mean, can't there be an open container and a no smoking clause for a nature preserve? I mean, is that too much to ask?
It's kind of your right as an American to drink a beer while you're floating down the river.
Sure.
That said, they found trampolines and kiddie pools left behind as trash over the 4th of July weekend. I mean, That makes no sense whatsoever. It was clearly an extreme circumstance. It was like the worst of the worst. There were so many people on that river over the holiday weekend when there was nice weather that you just saw just horrific stuff. You know, most days if you go down there right now, you probably wouldn't think to yourself, oh my God, this is overrun. But it certainly happens enough to the point where it is becoming a long-term problem. You know, the people who live up and down on that river certainly notice it. You know, I just heard, for example, at the takeout, you know, right along the side of Highway 82, there's a huge issue with parking, and people have gone and just kind of put up their own no parking signs to keep people from parking near their property.
So, I think if you talk to longtime locals, you'll find that they are the people who, when they're out in these places, they pick up trash. I know I do it.
I'm going to stand up for my generation here a little bit. I know of lots of people who will go out on the river strictly on a trash picking up mission, you know, after one of these busy days, and they'll come back with bags full of crap.
I think people from out of town are taking kids out there. And those people, I would say more than generational, I think it's a visitor thing.
In town people versus out of town.
People who weren't raised, like Lo is saying, picking up trash at a campsite. They just don't have that background.
If you go hiking up and down the Ute Trail, you see plastic bottles
discarded
on the side of the trail, and you're just thinking to yourself, who on earth would do that?
Well, then I'm completely depressed, everyone, in these topics.
Yay.
Thanks for coming in to the studio.
Thanks for having us, Carolyn.
Thanks for having us.
Have a good weekend.
That's going to do it for this week's edition of Valley Roundup. Thanks to Lorenzo Semple, a columnist for the Aspen Daily News, Jill Beathard, editor of the Snowmass Sun, and Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Thanks for joining me. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.